There was a report that McDonald's ESG rating improved because of a new policy and more disclosures. However, McDonald's greenhouse gas emissions are bigger than Portugal or Hungary. How can the ESG rating improve due to a new policy, but not by making progress on the key issue, which is their CO2 emissions?
Welcome to another episode of Let's Talk, the podcast sponsored by FundApps, the compliance monitoring and reporting specialists. Let's Talk is the podcast that puts people, profit and planet at the heart of the debate. And this season, we're talking ethics. We're chatting to our guests about its role in business, how well it is or isn't being handled, and how ethics is helping us make decisions that create a positive impact, and how they guide us to making the world we both work and live in a better place. It's time to get into it. Let's talk. Welcome to today's episode of Let's Talk. We are in season two and we are talking ethics. I'm joined today by Doris Honnold. I'm going to let Doris introduce herself shortly, but suffice to say, Doris is a financial services exec who has had a very illustrious career and is now moving over to sort of a focus on climate finance. So welcome, Doris. Thanks for joining us today.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Could you give our listeners a little bit of colour to your background in financial services?
Yeah, I have been in banking for more than, I'd say, 25 years. I had the good fortune of having a very international career. My background is I'm German. I have been living in London for a very long time, but I also lived in Tokyo, Singapore. I studied in the US, so I had a very, very exciting, very global career. My most recent executive role was Group Chief Operating Officer of Standard Chartered Bank, which is a UK bank, but they're very big in Asia, Africa, and the Middle East. I have now stopped my executive career and I'm really doing things where I can apply my financial services expertise to, I think, things that are really needed, which is climate change, energy transition, et cetera, et cetera.
Fantastic. And I think that background is going to enable us to have a really interesting conversation today around the whole ethics topic, which obviously is enormous. And we would literally be here for days if we covered all the different aspects of it. So I think we've like sort of picked a few areas to focus on today. Let's start off with a quick question here, Doris. Which is worst, bad culture or bad governance?
Thanks for that. You know, this is really like asking, would you rather die being shot or being strangled? It's bad culture kills an organization and so does bad governance. And they're feeding off each other, amplifying each other. Bad governance creates the best conditions for bad culture to develop and flourish. And vice versa. They can also strengthen each other. Good governance makes it hard for bad culture to spread widely across the organization. And good culture can, to some extent, compensate the weaknesses in your governance. So I'd say you'd absolutely need them both and you need to focus on both.
That makes sense. But it seems that maybe good culture has a little bit more sway than good governance in the sense that maybe that has a more sustainable route in the ethics thing. What does good culture look like, Doris?
For me, good culture is when whole companies, large group of people behave in the right way, in an ethical way. I think we need to differentiate between, you know, conduct and culture. Bad conduct is if individuals behave in the wrong way, and good culture is if groups behave in the right way. So good culture is more difficult to establish and bad culture is more difficult to erode.
Interesting. So continuing on that frame then, obviously you've been a senior banking executive in this industry, and the industry has been working really hard over the past 10 years to improve culture in the sector. Do you think they've succeeded?
I think, yes, they have come a long way. I mean, creating the right culture has been a big focus area in banks. And there has been a large number of initiatives around culture setting, monitoring, measuring, culture training, conduct frameworks, accountability reviews, disciplinary procedures. I could go on and on and on. So there has been a huge amount of activity and improvement. But of course, every time a new scandal happens, the same questions is being asked about culture in banks. And this is where I want to come back to my previous point. It's important to differentiate. Not every disaster, accident, scandal is due to bad culture. We have to acknowledge that things will go wrong, systems will break, people will make a wrong judgment, and we have to look at the root cause and really check, has there been one bad actor or has there been a big group of people acting in a questionable way? And I do see progress, and I see more and more organizations, not only banks, asking themselves, what is the right thing to do here? What is the impact on a whole group of stakeholders?
Yeah, as you say, it's a matter of breaking it down and actually getting to that root cause rather than necessarily knee-jerk reaction or the symptoms. Obviously, ESG is a big part of all of that. It's been a big part of your career. And I know for you, a big focus is, you know, good solutions for global problems. And the elements of ESG have been around for a long time, but we're hearing more about it now than maybe we have in recent years. Why so, in your opinion, Doris?
Yeah, and you're right. The topics have been around for a long time. You know, as an example, you could consider improving the labor conditions during the Industrial Revolution as efforts in S or G. And some say the whole ESG movement goes back to the 60s when people stopped investing in tobacco companies or in companies which were involved with South Africa's apartheid regime. I think the fact is corporates are very influential in shaping the world around them. And more questions are being asked about how companies are using this influence. Why now the big push? I'll see two drivers, I would say. Definitely the urgency of the climate crisis has emphasized the E over the last 10 years. But I would also say rising inequality in the West, in the US, in the UK. For example, in 1965, the pay ratio between CEO and average employee in the US was 1 to 15. Now it's 1 to 265, or in the UK, it's 1 to 200. And there might be a lot of valid reasons for this, but we should ask questions on what is really the driver around it, and especially comparing companies across the same sector.
Some interesting statistics there, Doris, and maybe something we can pick up again in another conversation. I'd be interested to hear more about that. Again, probably a topic we can talk about for hours.
Yeah.
And we've talked before about how often sort of lazy thinking is rife when it comes to ESG. What do we mean by that?
It's one of the things I feel so strongly about, and this is ESG has become so omnipresent. Everybody talks about it, but very often without really asking the right questions of what is really behind this ESG label or rating. We need to understand that ESG ratings and labels are still very much being based on input factors. And what I mean by that is that having an ESG policy improves your ESG rating. Having somebody on the board or executive team responsible for ESG improves your ESG rating. Improving your disclosures improves your ESG rating. They're all good things, but they don't necessarily guarantee a better outcome. And I always give the example, my goal was getting fitter and losing weight. You know, having a gym membership would be equivalent to having an ESG policy. A gym membership is a good start, but I still need to execute on my plan. I still need to go to the gym and exercise. Or equally, I can disclose my calories on the internet every day. It gives me a big tick on transparency, but it doesn't make me lose weight. For that, I need to eat less. And I love that example because there's so much hype about transparency and policy, but we really need to ask, what do we really want to achieve? And are we making measurable progress on improving that?
That's a great analogy, Doris. Thank you. Like you say, it's about what behavior are we changing? Are we consistent? And what's the actual real commitment?
Yeah, it's the other example I'll have is, you know, there was a report that McDonald's ESG rating improved because of a new policy and more disclosures. However, you know, McDonald's greenhouse gas emissions are bigger than Portugal or Hungary. So how can the ESG rating improve due to a new policy, but not by making progress on the key issue, which is their CO2 emissions?
Yeah, it's a bit of like a clickbait, isn't it? A bit of like headline without substance. So
exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Another great example of that. You also had an article in the Harvard Business Review entitled Measure What Really Matters, Accounting for ESG Impacts. And I think a lot of what was in there really, again, brings to life and sort of like underlines what we're talking about here in terms of what are we really trying to change and measure. So could you talk us through, you know, the main ideas in that?
Yes, absolutely. And you're absolutely right. The idea of what is happening is to overcome the weaknesses I just talked about. It stems from the idea that if you buy a product or invest in a company, you should really get a holistic view of their performance. You need to have more information than just the financial performance. You need accounts that reflect financial, social, and environmental performance. I'll give you an example. If you are going to a shop and you don't know, should I buy Coca-Cola or Pepsi? And you want to know which ones are better in addressing their environmental issues. You should be able to make your decisions not only on the price, but on information about their CO2 footprints, about their social performance, about the diversity of the company, everything you care about. You should know how good are they in recycling the plastic packaging? What is the damage this will create if it ends up in the ocean? And to make these impacts measurable and comparable, they need to be translated, I call it, in the language of finance. It sounds a bit funny, but that's exactly what we need. We need numbers, and that is the goal of the Harvard Impact Weighted Accounts Initiative.
That's interesting. So maybe if we use the example of fashion, might be a good example. If you had a company that was a fast fashion company, I presume with those measurements around financial, social, and environmental, say, I don't know what scale we use, Doris, but would it say be a 1 out of 10 versus maybe an organization that purposely sources from sustainable sources or recycles, upcycles, maybe has a B Corp ethos, they would get a much higher rating. Is that what we're talking about?
That's what we're talking about, exactly, taking into account all these impacts. But what it does, it doesn't give you a rating. It looks at your financial accounts and it adjusts that in a way. And for example, the first company creates a lot more damage for everybody. And this initiative prices this damage and adjusts your profits from the company, for example. And the results are staggering. If you adjust your accounts for the other impacts, there are hundreds of listed companies whose environmental damage is bigger than their profit. So you can be harsh and say, what is the point of these companies? But you can also say, well, looking at the damage they're creating to produce the product, is there a more environmentally friendly way to produce that product or that service? Or is the price really right? Not all costs are priced in. And do we need to adjust the price, which supports the whole idea around carbon pricing, et cetera, et cetera. So it sheds a really good light on how companies are operating and what costs are really, what costs of their production are not taken care of by the company because they pollute for free, they destroy nature for free, et cetera, et cetera. So that's where it's going.
Yeah, like you say, a different lens, a lot more context. And by the sounds of it, quite a good idea for maybe a new index people can trade on, really throwing some light on those, as you say, those top listed companies and, you know, making it much more comparable, like for like.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you pointed to exactly the right way, because, you know, if you look at an airline, you know, an airline does use a lot of fossil fuels. This is where we are at the moment. But if you look at the environmental impact of individual airlines, they do manage it differently. So even for airlines, even for cement companies, you can make a difference by the way you run your company. And this just sheds a light on it and creates comparability.
Thanks so much, Doris. Really enjoyed this part of our conversation. And like I say, I think lots more conversations to be had there. What I want to do now is sort of like change it up a bit and learn a little bit more about you. And for our listeners, this is where we ask Doris some quick, more personal questions and get some further insight into her sort of like ethics and thinking. As I say, this season our theme is ethics. And on that theme, what would be the most ethical way that you think of, Doris, to give away $5 million?
First, I will say if anybody gives away $5 million, I applaud them. It's good and generous. But if you ask what is the most ethical way, I would say it's something that isn't about you and your preferences, your ego and your interest, but it's really about where would these 5 million create the biggest impact? And there has been a lot of research which concludes that the biggest impact is achieved with just giving money directly to the people who need it. It takes your biases out of the question. It takes out the, I think I know what's best. I know what these people need, be it healthcare, food, education. It's respectful because it says, I trust you that you know best what you need this money for. So I think it's I would say it's something like that. Trust the people who need the money to make the right decision for themselves.
I like that. Trust, respect, and like you say, not your own biases, which I think is hard for people to do, but interesting. So a little quick fire round now. What was your first job?
My first job is I was an electrical engineer at the German Railway.
Enjoyable?
Interesting, but I stopped quite quickly on all aspects of it.
Your favorite month?
October.
You're going to have to tell us why, Doris.
Why? Because usually summer is so busy with party, drinking, outside, traveling. And October is just, it slows down a bit. It's still nice and warm, but it's more reflective. It's nice, it's slow, and it's kind of in the middle between summer and winter.
And your favorite word?
My favorite word is trilemma.
Okay, you're definitely, again, going to have to expand on that.
I like that because, you know, I talked a lot about challenging and thinking and thinking deeply on culture, on ESG, and really questioning what's behind it. And I like trilemma because we talk about dilemmas all the time. And trilemma just tells you it's usually more than two choices or two constraints. You have at least three, and it just makes people stop and think about and realize that things are a little bit more complicated than initially thought. And usually then it's not only three, you might find a fourth, but it gives you this nudge to think a bit deeper. It's not only two constraints we're having here.
Yep. And your favorite food?
Italian. I love Italy. I love the country, the people, the food, everything about it.
And your least favorite word?
My least favorite word is serendipity. And that's just because that's just too show-offy for me. People use it often in large speeches, and half of the people don't really know what it's meant. And you could just say happy coincidence.
Yeah.
And everybody knew what you're talking about.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of plain English. you know, you don't need to use big words when a simple word will do.
Exactly.
We're going to move now to Room 101. This is something that we did last season. And the Room 101 concept actually came from a BBC series where celebrities, and that today is going to be you, Doris, get to throw their least favourite things, their pet hates, the worst nightmares into that room. So what would you put in Room 101?
I thought about that, and I think the worst fear, and even when it crossed my mind, I got like, you know, a really heavy feeling on my chest, was like being trapped in a box and slowly drowning with the water coming up. Even talking about it really creates all horrible feelings. So that's my worst nightmare.
Okay. And what's the best piece of advice that you've been given?
Yeah, I'm not sure it's a piece of advice, but I think the best thing I've came across, which really helped me, it's a quote by Albert Schweitzer, and it's what he said, the key to a happy life, which he said is good health and a bad memory. And I just love that, because a bad memory just helps you to be happy, because you don't sweat things, you let things go. You don't overanalyze. Oh, why did he say that? Why did they do that? Are they undermining me? You know, all these conspiracy theories you have in your head. Just stop worrying about the things in the past, move on and forget about it.
Keep moving forward.
Yeah.
Just want to end on the topic here that's sort of quite dear to everyone at FundApps, which is the sponsor of Let's Talk. FundApps is a B Corp and has been since 2018. And we were one of the first from the financial services industry in the UK. And really, B Corps, as you know, are all about sort of good people, good business, good ethics. What do these things mean to you, and how does that play into the whole ethics debate and scenario?
Yeah, ethics for me is about doing the right thing and doing the right thing for all stakeholders, client, employees, the communities you operate in, and of course, your shareholders and investors. And so the idea of being a B Corp and the idea of being an ethical company is, for me, absolutely aligned.
I've really enjoyed our chat today, Doris, and really do genuinely look forward to having another chat. Of all the things that we've talked today, is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners before we go?
You know, it's the topic of ethics is a difficult one, and there are thousands of books about ethics, ethical behavior of organizations, corporate social responsibility, etc., etc. But the point is that doesn't always help people in their day-to-day when you will have to make very often very difficult trade-offs, you know, deciding what is the right way forward and thinking about these different stakeholders you interact with and who sometimes have conflicting priorities. So we shouldn't forget that these things are complicated. And at the end, it always, in the day-to-day work of business, it's just sometimes helpful to step back and say, what are we doing? What are our goals? Who's benefiting and who is harmed? And what is the right way forward?
Yeah, reflect, reassess, and maybe re-engineer.
Yeah.
Thanks so much, Doris, and look forward to speaking again soon.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of Let's Talk. We couldn't do it without you. Subscribe to our podcast if you haven't already at any of the normal channels. Also, take a moment to check out the FundApps website at fundapps.co to learn more about how FundApps puts people, profit and planet at the heart of compliance. See you next time.